Welcome to episode 12 of First Stage. Aaron here with the man, the myth, the legend, Caleb Davis.
What's up?
And with our guest this week, Mr. Corey Evans. What's up, Corey?
How's it going, guys? It's fun.
Doing good. It's been a fun time. Finally getting back to normal. So hopefully we'll actually get to be doing shows maybe in March.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about Corey being on the show is that he's one of the original, the Godfathers, one of the elite four that started all of this Laugh Up City business. And he's managed to travel the world and ended up back in Lubbock like most people do. So
that's been great. Yeah. Everyone that I've ever met was just like, why the hell are you going back there? And I was like, well, there's a house that's very cheap. So
yeah. And
Smart move.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not paying $2,000 for a shoebox, you know, to live in, so.
Yeah, that really was the main reason I left Chicago. Like, my nephew was born, but I was like, I need to live by myself again. I can't afford it in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, roommates. I was like, I say that and I have a roommate. And roommates. I'm living here. It's just like, I'm just cheap, guys.
Fuck you, Joe.
I was like, I like spending, like, $500 for rent, you know, and like, it's pretty dope. All right, let's go ahead and get your theme song going here.
So glad I don't smoke weed.
So I totally forgot we were doing this today, and then y'all reminded me last night, and I'm like, I gotta put something together and stuff. So like, this is what I came up with last night. So
does the theme song change every time?
Oh yeah, it's individual for each guest.
You know? Oh, that's awesome.
We had Chrissy on here last time, and I had extra time, so like I learned the intro. I learned the intro to like a Radiohead song, and I just changed it up and used those chords and stuff. Didn't have that kind of time, so like this is just my expertise on making a lot of dumb videos for YouTube and like adding like my own music to it, because I'm not going to use that like duty free, whatever it's called, like fair use crap that everybody uses.
That was that was awesome though. Like I would never have guessed that you made that. Like that was I was like, that's trippy as hell, but I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it's the art of like having like GarageBand, and then I just did five different things, and then just moved them around until they worked, and then I'm like, okay, there we go, that's the show.
Nice. Yeah, I think Timothy Williams' reaction to that intro song was probably my favorite, where he's just sitting there like looking at me and Aaron like, are these fucking guys serious? Or is this a joke? Shit? Or where is this? And I'm like, dude, that was. I just couldn't hold it. I started laughing. He's like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah, that's when I used the Street Fighter thing and stuff, because I said his name and I like, you could do it in all different tones and stuff and play it. So, yeah. He's like, "I like Kimothy, that. Kimothy. I like the K-Loke."
Yeah, K-Loke. That's what you hit him with.
But all right, like always like, this is basically about starting out and your first time and everything. And we've done the series of my first podcast that I shouldn't really let out into the world. So, but I've got like 10 of them, and we're on number 4 now. And I chopped down about a minute of it just to show how I cut out all the stuff that's really disparaging to me, but like I keep in some. So this is Vintage Durbin number 4.
Vintage Durbin.
And I believe this was recorded on Mother's Day. So here we go.
But like, my mom's a shit. It's you have friends, like certain friends that will either do a couple of things, like they'll either make you the partier or bring out the evil in you. And like this one was more the partier and stuff. I have a friend that lives in Oklahoma that just brings out the evil of me. I don't know how he taps into it, but like it's like you have a chance of getting arrested hanging out with him tonight. I'm like, if you're a new guy in a new city, you don't ever want to like pretend like you're the shit, especially at like someone's home bar, because like a guy basically went out and stuff, and like, it was the guy that wasn't part of the bar, I came in, like, and he punched this guy who was a regular, and then the regular just like punched the shit out of him, knocked him out. The guy didn't have a chance. He was drunkenly overzealous about his decisions and what he was going to do for the night. He's like, I can take this guy. And so, like, and then he asked the bartender, he's like, did you see that guy punch me and stuff? He's like, yeah, but we don't know you, so you need to get the fuck out of the bar. You're done. Leave. That's loyalty. But the next one will be fun because I will be recording the next podcast while I will be driving to Santa Fe. So I'm going to compete in a comedy competition in Albuquerque that following Saturday. But I figure I'll live it up in Santa Fe for a couple days before that.
Vintage Durbin number 4. All right.
There we go.
And just to let the people know, did not win that contest.
That was my first question. It's how did that go?
So it was one of those things where...
Show?
It was totally voted on the people there. And so this guy that just brought 20 people won. And I'm like, that guy again passed the next round. And he went to, I think it moved to El Paso after that. Yeah, he got slaughtered that next round. But like the guys who were hosting it, like they're just like, we thought you were really funny, man. It's just like, yeah, this is just the rules of the thing. You know, you got to bring people. And I'm like, well, it was me and Adam Hernandez on that show. So or on that contest.
You're like, at least I beat him, right? Yeah. I beat him?
They're like, I don't know. Like, But that was Vintage Durbin number 4. Always fun to do that. Always fun to go back and like some of that stuff. It was just like, man, I'm in a really sad place in this. But it's always good. But this is first stage starting out, and we are talking about Corey Evans here, and we always like to get something really early on that you've done. You sent me an audio clip that sounded terrible. I just died. That's me just like thinking of that Vintage Durbin now, like you sent me this. Is this let's give a little backstory on this. First, how did you get into comedy, and give us a little backstory on this guy.
So this video was either my first or second time on stage. I don't remember. I did two like pretty close back to back. I did not want to do comedy, but I was living in Lubbock, very depressed, and I had a friend, Joe Gardner, who basically peer pressured me into doing comedy. And I hate this clip because it's so bad, but
but
I do love this clip because I do remember whether it was my first or second time. I think it was my first. I got off stage and instantly was like, oh, I love this. And I didn't want to do it at first. And Joe just kind of peer pressured me. And this is probably a month of writing. Is like before we went up, we knew it was going to be in a month, and we all sat down and we'd write. We knew we were going to have 10 minutes, which is way too much time for your first time on stage.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah,
it's bad.
Looking back, that's a bad idea.
I was explaining this clip to my girlfriend. I said, this is the best filmed set I ever had because it was professionally filmed. And it's the best structured set I've ever had, and it's garbage. But we wrote on this for like 10 weeks, and none of us had done comedy before, but we'd still give each other notes like we knew what we're doing. We're like, no, you got to throw in a callback, man. John Mulaney always does a callback.
And just like a loose interpretation of comedy you've heard.
Yeah, it was terrible. But after a month, I went up. I was scared as shit, but I got off stage, and I really do. I hate that this clip is available for people. But
I couldn't find it. I had to get you to send it to me because I guess I've got your new YouTube where like this is Mike's polished stuff, and like I'm like, well, I don't really want to use this one. You like sound way too confident.
When you sent me that, I was hoping you did find my old one. You found my first time, and you're like, but it's just so good. There's no way that's your first time. And then you sent me like one from 2019. I was like, damn it, okay. But. Yeah, this is, and I don't mind saying I used to go by a different name, and I just can't anymore because I got fired, and this is the only comedy you can find under my real name, which means every student I've ever taught has found it.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
My students brought it up today, and they're like, do you really do this? And I was like, no, I was a liar.
They're going to be talking about this the podcast next week or two. It's just like, hey, teacher, sir. Like,
no, that's why you got to use my new name. I was like, y'all aren't going to be able to find this podcast.
I'm impressed I have not messed it up yet because I'm so used to like.
I was like confused when I was sitting there. I was like, are you saying his real name? Like, I'm like, no, that's the one we're
You're like the
to be
John
wrong.
Cougar Mellencamp of Lubbock comedy. You've changed your name like three times.
I have. I tried to go. So I'll tell my old last name. It's so dumb. I feel so stupid because y'all know my last name. Right. But I just don't. And honestly, I don't even care if my last name is used in this audio clip, so don't be nervous about that. I just don't want it put in the fucking,
we insert this party, guy. Yeah, yeah.
But I tried to go by Corey Mooney because that was my mom's maiden name.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was just like, I get way too into my head about comedy, and I was like, man, four syllables? Nah.
Corey Mooney.
And then I changed it to Corey Evans. And it was still like, I literally changed it because it had four syllables. And then I changed it to something with four syllables. So I don't know what's
wrong.
Could have
been
with
that one word guy. This is Mooney coming to stage.
Yeah. Could have just been Mooney.
Well, I used to, when I did poetry, I went by Jack Mooney. And that's a pretty badass name.
Jack Mooney.
But it doesn't sound super funny.
We're going to get out of this and we're going to know that you've had like 25 aliases.
Yeah,
like,
way too many. It's bad.
I think that's the real reason you moved back to Lubbock. It's super easy to just like burn your identity and start over here.
Reinvent yourself.
Yeah. No, that's Charles Evans. It's like all these different connections of like variations of your real name.
Yeah, just no one knows who I am at the end.
You got like nine girlfriends. It's like, hey, Bill. Yeah. Like, no, I'm not Bill.
That would be the life. That's what I'm going for here in Lubbock, Texas. You got
four families in Lubbock.
I don't feel like you can have four families in Lubbock. Like, it's not a huge
city. Yeah. You have to change
this
religion.
Is my Food King family. This is my Market Street family. This is my HEB family.
This is my Amigos family.
Okay. Either there or just like religions. You could have. Probably get away with it that way.
Do you have four religions in Lubbock?
I think so.
I mean, there's like four, Baptist, there's like 18 there's different kinds Baptist, of Christianity. Yeah,
Presbyterian, second Presbyterian, first Presbyterian.
I'm gonna marry That's one just, from everybody.
There you go.
Just keep it going. So this set was at Jake's Back Room, right?
Yes, Jake's Back Room.
And that's I think this if this is your first set, then my first set was the very next time y'all did it. Because I went to the second show.
And I think we did it monthly back then.
Okay, so yeah. So I was probably like a month behind you. And when I got there, like I was like, these guys know what the hell they're doing. Nobody knows me here. I'm just going to go up, do my thing, get out of here. And I think it was like Joe or you or somebody came by and talked to me. And he's just like, you going to do this again? I'm like, yeah, I think it'll be fun.
And here we are.
All right. Right. So normally I would have time to edit this and stuff, but I don't. So strap in because I think this is 13 minutes long.
It's yes. long. It's very long.
So
let's go.
Here we go, baby.
Getting some woos.
It is exciting.
Even intro music?
This is the only time I've ever danced onto the stage.
All right, I'm recording,
we can't clear this.
That.
All right, there we go.
So, who hates their roommate? All right. So I'm pretty new to stand-up. But my best friend growing up, he did a lot of stand-up. And he would go up and I'd be like, what are you going to talk about? And he'd be like, I don't know. Which is terrifying, but he would just look at the audience and say things about the audience. He would look at a guy and be like, hey, check out this guy's shirt. It's dumb, right?
Early crowd work.
Who gave you that shirt? A dumb person? And he was a lot funnier than I was, though. But I figured out I can't do that. Mainly because I'm too nice. Like, I will call out an audience member and I'll be like, hey, check out this guy in the glasses. Look at this guy in the glasses and his symmetrical face and strong jawline. What are you? Handsome or something? Boom, roasted. I want to be you. Or I'd look at a girl and I'd be like, hey, everybody, look, check out this girl's shoes. Look at this girl's shoes. They go perfectly with your outfit. What are you, fashionable or something? Boom, roasted. I wish you got me dressed every morning. Or I'd be like, hey, check out this girl over here. Look at this girl. With her hair and her eyes. What are you? beautiful or something. I think I love you. Boom, roasted. I'm single.
I hate this.
So I'm a nice person. Because my parents raised me extremely religious, and in church you're taught not to say mean things to people when they're there. But I was raised extremely religious. Nothing wrong with that. I love religious people, except I was also raised extremely stupid. So I didn't understand miracles. I didn't understand miracles were so great because they were miraculous. So one day I was 5 years old. I was in kindergarten, and I was learning about Jesus healing a blind guy in Sunday school. And pretty much what happened was Jesus called the blind guy over. He picked up some dirt, and he spit in it. And then he rubbed the dirt in the blind guy's eyes. Which, I mean, that's not a big deal. That's not a bad thing for a kid to learn. But I had a blind kid in my kindergarten class. It gets better. So one day, I'm on the playground, and Thomas was the blind kid's name. He's over by the tetherball courts, and I'm like, Thomas, come here. And so he walks over there like this, because I think that's how a blind guy walks. And I was like, all right, Thomas, come here. I'm going
to help
you out.
Do we listen to the whole thing?
I'm going to help you out, Thomas.
Yeah.
So I get some dirt, and I spit in it. And
sounds like you did a really professional
the
blind
dirt
walk.
In Thomas's eyes. And guys, this is
physical,
a completely
physical
true
comedy.
Story.
I haven't got a chance to listen to this.
I promise. So I rub the dirt in Thomas's eyes, get it nice and good in there. And I swear to God, this is what happened next. Thomas kind of looks confused, like he doesn't know what just happened. And he kind of looks around. And then he looks at me. And I wouldn't lie to you guys. I swear to God, the next thing he says is, ah!
That's brilliant.
Because that's what happens when you rub mud in a blind kid's eyes.
Because that's
it
what
hurts.
Happens.
Trust me. So like I said.
Am I allowed to talk during this?
Yeah.
Okay,
thank
so
God.
A bunch of
oh, yeah, yeah. We're commentating while
well,
we're listening.
Rules. One of our strict rules was my parents wanted me not to smoke, which is fair, but they're like, never ever smoke. Your grandpa died from smoking. Don't ever smoke. And so I went to college, and my first week of college, someone walked up to me and they're like, hey, do you want a cigarette? And my response was, okay. And I smoked ever since. I smoked for about 5 years. And I've just recently started trying to quit.
That's
and,
not true. I'm still smoking.
Getting some woos.
Yeah, I got some woos on the line.
But I'm just recently trying to quit.
Lie to me, baby.
And I didn't quit for the health benefits or the cost benefits. I quit because people judge you when you smoke. Like, I've had several times I'm outside smoking, and someone I've never met comes up to me, and they're like, hey, just so you know, that kills you. Which I already
I
know, so I try to be
this.
Very polite. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I already know that. I choose to do it anyway. Thank you, though. But it got really annoying at some point, so I started responding like this. People would come up to me and be like, hey, just so you know, smoking can kill you. And I'd say, what? And I would pull out my pack of cigarettes and look at the warning label and say, what the hell? And I'd throw them away and make a big deal, and they'd be like, good for you.
This took
like
a month
like
to write.
I'm sure
$15
they went home and they're
right
like,
now.
Honey, I got a kid to stop smoking today.
Like,
it was wonderful.
Took a month to write.
Yeah. But that always really annoyed me, except one time. One time, because it was a different person than normal. One time I was outside, I was smoking a cigarette, and this kid comes up to me. He had to be 8 years old. Tops. He was in a little schoolboy uniform, you know, had a little cowlick, short shorts, clip-on tie, knee-high socks, just an awkward-looking little kid.
This is the creepiest thing
and
I've ever said on
me,
stage.
The creepiest thing ever, and he says, Mister, I just wanted you to know that we've learned about smoking in school, and it's bad for you, and it can kill you, and I don't want you to die. And I mean, exactly, that's how I felt. What do you do with that when this little kid sincerely cares about you? He's never met you, but he sincerely cares about you. I had no idea what to do. So, like any decent human being, I take my cigarette and I put it out on his forehead.
And I think that's the biggest spot. Life there I got.
Is it my fault? I mean, where was this kid's parents? He was just like, guys, I'm going to go around and save people's
That's the thing.
Lives.
All my students have seen this because it's under my real name on YouTube.
It wasn't my fault.
And they're all like, did you really put a cigarette out on a kid's head?
Yeah, better watch out, kids.
Before I was a teacher, yes.
My family didn't like it, but they still supported me. Families are interesting. I've noticed that every family has one thing that's weird about them that they don't like people saying, one phrase that's not allowed. I went to a friend's
this
house once,
got
and
me in trouble.
I accidentally got frustrated. I said, geez. And their dad walked in and said, we don't say geez in this house.
God damn it.
Because it's half of Jesus. Which is a little weird.
That really happened?
But my family has
yeah, that did happen.
Like,
that
is my fucking so stupid.
This was the
that,
only joke I liked out of this.
They hate the phrase shop till you drop. Which is weird, I know. It's probably because my grandma died in Walmart, but whatever.
That's a joke I'm not allowed to do anymore because my grandma did die in Walmart.
Oh, so no.
And my dad, that's the first time my dad ever watched my stand-up as he
kids.
Saw this.
Do you remember when you
and I told that joke and he went,
you
and he just got real sad and was like, and then he closed the computer and I was like, well,
can't.
That joke's gone. And that's the only salvageable thing from this.
You can still be where, whoever you want to be.
But dad, that's the only one I can really use.
Or your dreams, or like the internet. And my place where I can be whatever I want to be is in my car when I'm alone. And when I'm in my car alone, I can be whatever I want to be, and almost always I want to be black. I listen to rap music.
Oh God!
Thank you. I'm almost.
We get to go over all this, right? Because I just don't want
to
talk over anything.
Lot,
this also is a fun story.
Super white friends. I'm like, this is funny because we don't like this music, but we're listening to it anyway, right? That's funny. It's ironic. But then I drop my friends off, and I become Jay-Z. It's bad. One time I was in the character. I was being Jay-Z, 99 problems, and I got pulled over by a cop. And so the cop pulls me over, I roll down my window, and he is like, son, do you know what I'm stopping you for? And I was like, because I'm young and I'm black and my hat's real low. Do I look like a mind reader, sir? I don't know. Am I under arrest or should I get some response. More? And he said, sir, are you intoxicated? I'm not very good with women. Maybe it's because I think I'm Jay-Z.
Segway.
But women don't like me very much, which is sad because I think women are beautiful. Girls, you are so sexy and it makes me jealous.
God.
Yeah,
this was just me trying to get laid.
For the sexiness of girls.
Someone clap hands for the girls.
But it's not fair because guys can't be sexy.
And I thought getting me laid would be me going, I'm single and girls are sexy.
And here's my proof. Girls,
shoot your shot,
homie. You can say the sexiest things. And if a guy's turned on, especially because it doesn't even have to be sexy. Once a guy's turned on, you can whisper anything and the guy's into it. Like, you can go up to a guy when he's turned on and be like, I want to paint the walls purple. And the guy's going to be like, yeah, we can paint those walls purple. We can paint those walls purple all night. Or you could even go up to a guy that you've never met before and just be like, hey, I'm wanted for third degree murder. And the guy would be like, oh, you're a bad girl. But guys,
why was the crowd
that.
On my
we
side?
We can't say sexy things. We just sound dumb.
Lubbock, baby.
The closest thing we can get is saying nice things. Like, the sexiest things I think I can say to a girl is like, say, girl, hey, baby, I want to watch The Notebook with you.
Still never seen it.
End. Oh, it's so sad.
Or, like, if I'm just like, no, yeah. Hey,
huge boner kill.
That dress doesn't make you look fat. Which is weird, because those are the sexiest things I can say to a girl. The sexiest thing a girl can say to me is, say we're at home. And we just had a nice dinner. We're sitting on the couch. And if the girl leans in really sweet and she just whispers, yes, I will have sex with you. Sexiest thing they can possibly say. I'm like, okay, let's go. It's also unfair that girls can wear sexy
desperate.
Outfits. Like, you know, a girl can wear a sexy nurse outfit or a sexy maid outfit. But my favorite is the sexy schoolgirl outfit.
You wait for the callback, baby.
The short skirt and they can get away with that because they're so cute, and they can say things like, "I need some extra credit."
Oh God!
For me, like one time I went home. If I ever went home to a girl and was like, "Hey baby, I got you something."
So he's watching a ton of porn at the time.
Yeah. Boy outfit. The girl would just be confused. Like, what am I supposed to do? Pull on my knee-high socks and my short shorts, clip on a tie, and she'll be like, "Oh baby," and you're like, "What are we gonna do tonight?" And I'd be like, "Nothing, because you have cooties." And I mean, what are girls supposed to do with that? What are you supposed to do with schoolboys? She would probably just look at me and then put her cigarette out on my head.
Callback, baby.
Should have a callback.
All right.
Callback signature. Hold it down.
That was literally me being like, and you're supposed to end on a callback.
There you go. I really thought you were going to go like Catholic priest with that. It's like, and then she has to dress up like a Catholic priest for us to have sex.
I wasn't funny back then, or I would have.
Yeah. Like, I've got to carry this cross around the whole room for a little? Yes, longer. Hold it for another 40 minutes. And then after everyone leaves, then we get
it on. Yeah, yeah. I got to go light the candles, and then you come up behind me and say that that God wants you to come into my bedroom.
Jesus.
Hey, man, it's only based off reality. Okay.
I know. That's what's so fucking... Come on, Jesus. You're supposed to protect those boys.
Wow, so that was a lot to unpack on that one. this is why I would try to edit these, like, because after our first couple of ones where it's like 10 minutes, like 10 minutes feels really long on a first like open mic. Like,
it's bad.
When you're on stage, you feel like, I didn't do any time at all. But like, you know, it's like the world hates this.
That
like,
was 13 minutes of bullshit. But you
could tell the structure, and you could tell you practiced it. You could tell you were workshopping it with people, and stuff. It's like, what about this? What about this? And
yeah,
they call back in.
It was like very like formulaic. It was
right.
I did the research. I was there.
Yeah.
just wasn't funny.
Well, I mean, you were still like, I just always find it curious, like, I don't know, like the more, like you got some laughs halfway through, it's not like it was just dead silent. It wasn't just the most cringeworthy shit, but you always can tell like when comedians start getting more confident and like, I don't know, it's just interesting how that works like in a set, like, you know, you're just kind of, I could even tell like in the change in like the pattern of your voice, like whenever you started, you're like a little shaky and then, okay, they thought this was funny, all right, cool, then I can slide in this one, then you got a pretty decent laugh, then you got a good laugh, and then you like...
Yeah, towards the middle, there was like a really
good
laugh.
Then you hammered those last jokes at the very end, like, oh, I know these, then I'm going to tell them. I'm going to be confident behind them. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I felt very lucky just because I don't know, like, I know some people who bombed their first set and then still were like, I love this. I don't know if I was that person. Like,
so you think if you did terrible, you would not come back?
Yeah, and I mean, I by no means killed that, but at that point, I'd never gone on stage before, and I got like four laughs. I thought I killed. I thought I murdered. Which was why I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, I literally walked off that stage and told someone, I was like, I'm moving to Chicago, because I'd been listening to comedy podcasts. And that's a big reason I moved to Chicago. And I don't know if I would have ever done stand-up again if I absolutely bombed, which I deserved to.
Did you, like, the second time around, that's did you bomb? Because like, a lot of times people that have their first great set, like, and then the next one, they're just like, it just didn't work this week. I don't understand it. And
I think I had four or five sets before I bombed.
Oh, that's good.
I remember my first bomb because I'd done four or five sets. And I'd started, like, actually working jokes and being like, well, this joke about Catholic schoolgirls always works.
So you're like, so I'm good. I can lean on the Catholic. And I can do the
Catholic. Well, this was also when, like, I fucking started. Comedy for me was a huge, like, savior for my life because I was very depressed. I feel like I'm bringing us down now, but like I was very depressed.
A lot of people are like that. I mean, I was doing it because I needed something else.
Yeah, I was sitting at home. I was watching 10 seasons of Monks. I think I told y'all.
Yeah.
And I was very depressed. And then I did comedy, and it kind of started getting me out of that. But it also helped because I had friends now, and I had done four open mics and had done pretty well, and I was like, man, I'm fucking awesome. Like, I remember listening to podcasts where people were like, everyone bombs, and I was like, these fuckers haven't met me.
I'm the one guy. Me and Sinbad. I've never bombed before.
And so I remember, like, amazing. There was, like, it was my first show. Because everything else was an open mic. This was a show. And, like, people were like, yeah, and then Corey's going to close out the show. Because I really was starting with open mics. I was doing better than most. And, like, I was so fucking arrogant. I was like, yeah, I'll show up, you know, like, 30 minutes after the show starts. And I'm just going to go bomb. And I invited everyone to my house to drink. Because I was like, well, every time I do this, I want to drink because I'm partying. Because yeah. It's so good. So yeah,
because it's so great, you know.
And so I invited people out to a show. I'd never bombed before. Also, I'd been on stage 4 times. So I had 4 times where I'd gotten a laugh. Because that's what bombing was back then. Like now, like bombing is like, it's different. But back then, if you get 1 laugh, you didn't bomb.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'd never bombed before. But then I went on stage during my first show ever, being like, man, I'm so fucking awesome. I'm just going to blow them away. And I went on stage and literally like 0 laughs. Like even like, because you know, usually you can save it by being like, man, y'all didn't like that. And at least someone will giggle. Yeah. And if someone would have giggled, when I said like, nah, you didn't like that, I would have been like, well, I didn't bomb. They didn't even giggle when I was like, oh, y'all didn't like that. And I just bombed for 10 minutes straight. And I'd already invited like 13 people back to my house.
Oh, man, I got to hang out with these people.
Gracious host, I'm sure. Yeah.
And I remember I got back to my house. My roommate did stand up at the time. He's the guy who introduced me. And I got back to my house. And everyone was there partying, and I just bombed for the first time. And I went in and I got the bottle of Jack Daniels I'd bought to do shots. And I took it and I just walked around my neighborhood and I just drank. And then I remember very
it's like a Tom Waits song playing in the background. Jesus. Well,
I don't know if my mom had to know, but like I drank like half a bottle of whiskey and then I called my mom and I just bawled. Aww. And I just like called my mom and I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And
did your mom know that you were doing stand up and like did you know?
No, my mom didn't know I was doing stand up. As far as my knowledge goes, my mom didn't know I drank. And so I just called her fucked up after I bombed.
She's probably so excited to hear from you. It's like, oh, he's finally talking to me. And so she didn't know you're like wasted.
She's like suburban to Midland now.
But honestly, like looking back, like
from Midland to Lubbock,
4 shows in a row without bombing, like that's good.
It's solid.
I don't know if I would have made it if I would have started out bombing. And I've seen people who start out bombing who become very funny. And I also, I think I sound arrogant. I didn't deserve to do well that set. We had 80 people who were all Joe's friends who were there trying to be supportive.
Yeah.
So they were like making themselves laugh. I deserved to bomb my first
time. Yeah, because when I was there, it was maybe half that. Like, it was a lot less people for sure. And we talked about Jake's back room before, but it's this giant cavernous like rock show place.
Oh yeah.
So like the tables are way so far away, and so like it's harder to laugh. So it's like it feels like, you know, you're speaking to like a big like a shotgun room or something.
Right. Unless it's like absolutely fucking packed and they're there to see a comedy show, like good fucking luck in there.
Yeah.
Like that is a tough sized room. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, the audio there is all cool and all that, but like, good luck. Like, I don't know. To me, that's just, it's not something that is in Lubbock's like lifeline of like, look, unless we can fucking absolutely pack it, it's just not going to be somewhere.
That's a once
where
a year
like, this
venue.
Is incredible. Yeah.
I think the last comic I think that did there was Steve-O or something. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't go to that show, so I don't even know how it was, but like,
I just know, like, yeah, we had like 80 people that first open mic. And then, like, Jake's is a place, if there's under 40 people, like, even right now, where I've gotten a lot better at comedy, if I walked into Jake's and there were 40 audience members, I'd be like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just so big. Like you said, it's, like, cavernous, and it's, like, you know, three like, people could be, 4 or 5 people could be ordering a drink, but that's, like, 100, like, 50 yards away.
Yeah,
it's, like,
super
deep.
Yeah, and if you go out to drink, like, you're going through seas of people, like, a big show or something, and I don't know the last one was that Real Big Fish.
Well, the stage is probably 5 feet off the ground too.
Yeah,
so like
right.
There's I actually like lower stages, just because I'm closer to the audience. This one's like there
it's
are people who can
like
stand up in your
it's
crowd and can't see your feet.
Yeah.
Like it's not good for it's good for a giant room of comedy, but it's not good for the comedy that you're, it's not good for local comedy.
No.
Yeah, you want to stick to like the bar shows and like small rooms that got you there, you know? Sorry, I was trying to do like a waterfalls thing, but
take it back to the bar shows like we used to. Yeah.
We don't will eventually. We're gonna have to go talk Jake's to these people. Yeah, no. After this COVID stuff, it's like starting over almost. It's like, hey guys, you remember how to laugh again? It's like you remember how like half these people are gonna insult you and tell jokes that are just gonna make you hate your life, like because you know it's like we're gonna have an open mic. And people would come out was like doing these like hacky COVID jokes or something, and it's just like, yeah, half my family died from that. You son of a bitch, you know? Like,
well, and just most of the jokes aren't good. I need to write COVID jokes. I know I need to. This is not an excuse for me to be lazy, but I've just heard so many people were like, COVID, I've been masturbating. And it's just like, all right, yeah, we all have, man. Like, this isn't even funny anymore.
Like, Jesus Christ, can y'all fucking loosen this thing up a little bit?
Yeah, I've got an eight COVID joke. Like, it's just like, this is my COVID masturbation joke. It's like, so yeah, during the COVID and stuff, I quit watching porn. I've just been jerking off to Dr. Jen Ashton. And like, that's only if you watch like the news in the middle of the day. It's like a lady doctor. It's like during lunch.
Tell me what's wrong with me. Tell me what's wrong with me.
Oh man, but like that was fun because like we could like you could see the confidence in and like. And like, even though it was 13 minutes, I don't think it was as cringeworthy as you were cringing. Like for me at least, I was like, I'm just like, oh, I'm kind of interested to hear where this goes on a lot of them.
Thank you. I tell kids this all the time. Kids think they've caught me when they find this online. I've reported this to YouTube for at least 40 times.
So you didn't drop this. This isn't on your
no.
thing. So somebody else was this is your Doug Stanhope like I think somebody dropped one of his thing from his really early like 6 months in or whatever and he's like so mad about it.
No, this was I worked with this dude who was trying to get a business going where he filmed events and he's like, "Can I film yours? It'd be good for you, but like it'd also get people to see what I can do." And I worked with the guy. He was my manager at the time and I was like, "Yeah." And I mean, like, at this point, I've messaged him. Like, I looked him up. I haven't talked to this dude in 4 or 5 years, and I looked him up.
Do you live in Lubbock?
He did 2 years ago. I looked him up 2 years ago. Yeah, let's fuck this dude.
That's right.
And take it off.
I'll put a cigarette out on that motherfucker's head. Call back.
I'm just, I like my job. I'm scared this is going to get me fired. I don't think there's anything disgusting in this, but like if a parent threw a big enough fit, I could get fired from teaching.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so I've messaged this dude and I was like, "Hey man, can you please take that off?" And he was just like, "I'll try." And I was like, "No, you don't fucking try. You take it off." And he didn't.
Yeah, it's real simple. I've taken a lot of stuff off my YouTube channel. I'm like, well,
well, that's your second one. It's like, good. Please? And then you just go, "No, fucking take it off now."
Yeah, and he does not. Then I've reported it to YouTube like 30 times. And their thing is like, "Is this using your face without your permission?" And I'm like, "That is literally my face." And they're like, "Well, that's not enough.
It's not my word. Someone else said that."
Yeah.
But my kids always think they've caught me when they find this.
Oh, yeah,
they're like, "Mr. Wood, we
YouTube
found your YouTube." And like the thing is, like, I wish I could explain this to kids. Like, yes, I don't want to get fired, but honestly, if my boss called me in tomorrow and was like, "We found your YouTube video," I'd be like, "Just so you know, that was my first time on stage. I'm so much funnier now."
Exactly.
I'm so much better than I am.
Well, it's not like you're sitting there like, "I'm going to take some child and fucking deep throat my cock down his fucking little young throat." Like, you're not, this wasn't like super out there. Like, you were not vulgar. I don't even think you even cussed.
Yeah, we had Paul on here and he's like, "You know what? He's my first one. I dropped the hard R a lot." And like, yeah, we're not putting that on the.
Yeah. At least you didn't do that. I mean, we're talking, you know, you don't have any.
It's
you
like,
know,
I want everyone's first set unless it causes political uprising or whatever. I don't want any of that. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of it's awful, but it's just like, as a teacher, like, you're not even supposed to be like. It's like, if you are a teacher, you are a virgin unless you are married. And then you've had sex the number of times you've had kids. Like, that's... And
right,
so it's kind of like, I don't think I'll ever get fired for this, but there is a small part of me that's like, if a parent throws a big enough fit, I could one day.
Are you hoping that happens so you can sue the school district?
No, I actually really like my job.
Well, the good thing is we can use this podcast as evidence. And it's like, see, he didn't want it out either. He's been trying to get it taken down.
Exactly. You know? That's the only reason I'm doing this podcast. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things that I know in your set that at least piqued my interest on. I know, like, at least the first thing I wrote down was Black Corey. So, you know, he talking about acting like Jay-Z and stuff, which, like, we've all done it. I mean, if you're a white guy, you've
sometimes you gotta sing those lyrics. You know it's wrong.
You rip the lyrics and you do what you can do, but
flows so good.
I don't know. I guess I'm curious in a sense of, like, if you, like, workshopped all this stuff, did y'all take a super amount of time and be like, how can I say that I'm like Jay-Z? Like, did you, like, I don't know.
Do you have like a black friend who's like, is this cool? Can I do this?
Yeah, I just want to be like a fly on the wall for that, like, no, joke writing session.
I never ran it by, that was like what I ran by Joe and no one else. And he was like, yeah, that's funny. That came back to bite me in the ass in Chicago. I started dating this girl in Chicago. I started dating this black girl in Chicago. And then she knew I did stand up, and she'd been to a couple of my shows, but I'd never invited her back. Like, I didn't invite her out a whole lot. We were just hooking up. And then one day she came over to my house, and like, I thought it was like cool. Like, she was just like, hey, can I come over? And I was like, hell yeah, that usually means sex. And she came over and she was like, so you want to be black? And I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
So she, like your students found this YouTube and like.
Yeah, yeah. So she had Googled.
She Googled you and then was like. And she'd seen this. So she sat through at least 8 minutes to get to that.
She sat through a long ass time.
So was this after the first time you
hooked
up? That's
what I'd say. This is bullshit.
No, we'd been hooking up for a little while. Like,
she was getting interested. And it's just like, I should really do some research on this guy.
Yeah, it was like we'd probably hooked up 4 or 5 times. Like, not a whole lot. But, like, you know, it was kind of at this point to where we'd talked about, like, because originally we hooked up and we're like, we're just hooking up. We're not doing anything. And then we both kind of.
And you caught feelings.
Yeah, and then we both kind of caught feelings, and then she came over one day, and she's like, what is this? Like, you want to be black? Like, is this just a fetish thing for you? And I was like, no, that was a bad joke. It just, like, it was just not a good joke. And I...
Well, that kind of answers it for you. We're like, wait, you're offended by this? Like, yeah, yeah. It's like, work.
I did run it by a black friend just 5 years too late when I was trying to fuck that black friend.
And they're like, no, contraire.
Oh, they did not like it. And that, like, really kind of ruined that thing. We, like, anything we had going, she was just like, I feel like you are fetishizing me. And I was like, no, I was just a dumb guy doing jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, the problem, though. Almost everywhere, just without everyone's first set's probably gonna be recorded by someone or something, and it's just like, and you gotta try. You don't know what the line is until you get out there and do it, and you want to be edgy a lot of times. You want to sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you don't know what edgy and wrong is, and like, and so you're gonna push. You're just like, I'm gonna get people's attention, and it's just like, yeah, well, you just got canceled, bro. You know, like, unfortunately, yeah, that's the world we live in. Like, right.
Well, I think that's where like comedians just gotta, you know, stick together and just be like, you know what, fuck you, you're don't
sensitive. Yeah, let us police ourselves.
That's,
you know?
That's dumb. I think comedians can police themselves and be like, that's fucked up, and that's kind of a little over the line. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, it comes down to, you know, putting out content that, you know, you can stand behind. And sometimes there's stuff that they take, you know, we've all done it probably at some point in time or another. We take liberties of whatever set or whatever phrase you want to use, and then you're just like, I hope no one finds out about that one.
Yeah, and it's...
I mean, but you're still expressing yourself. It's still art, and, you know, and so...
Yeah, don't ever be, like, succumbed to, like, the words of, like, a set or joke or what they're doing and stuff, because, like, you're still trying... The whole goal is to make people laugh, and sometimes there's a lot of misses, and sometimes people take bigger swings than other people, so...
Yeah, and it's important to have, like, diverse friends. Like, I've had jokes that thank God were not recorded, and I've had friends like who have been part, because here's the thing, is you should try to avoid jokes that are punching down or punching on like a different things. And I've
agreed,
had,
unless it's against Ted Cruz. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we're all against Ted Cruz right now. Yeah,
fuck that guy.
Why'd he leave on Texas? All right, anyway, keep going.
But you, I mean, miserable piece of shit.
I've had friends who've come up to me and I've done a joke about this community and they thought I was punching down and they were part of that community. And I've been lucky enough to where, like, they weren't even mad. They're just like, look, man, that was rude. Like, that was a rude joke. It wasn't funny. It was definitely not funny enough for you to be rude. And I've been able to be like, oh, you're right. And I think it is just helpful having comics come out and be like, oh, you thought you could say this. You fucking can't. And for people to be like, oh, you're right. I shouldn't have said that.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's happened in shows. Like we're just like, I've said something and somebody's been like, yeah, you can't really do it. I'm like, oh, sorry. I was like, I was thinking I was getting away with myself, taking liberties. And then I just went too far, you know? And
it's not that I fear it, but you know, like, I feel like you kind of know, like, if you are kind of pushing it or if you say something wrong, you're like, I shouldn't have brought that up with that. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, you are still, you know, workshopping stuff. So, I mean, I think that there is some truth to it to where it's like, look, some people feel like they're privileged and they're like, hey, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I don't think that that's most comedians. Yeah. Most people that are actually pretty effective at doing comedy know where their line is. And when they step over it, they're going to either be remorseful or try to fix it. And then people that are just selfish fucking narcissists that fucking know that what they can do, just continue to do that shit.
Yeah, you got to be a funny comic. Because here's the thing, is I've seen a lot of unfunny comics say some fucked up shit on stage. Yeah. Well, yeah. And it doesn't get a laugh because you just said something fucked up.
Right.
And then, like, their thought process goes like, well, I have freedom of speech, so I'm allowed to say that, so y'all should have laughed. And it's like, no, if your audience isn't laughing, you shouldn't have said what you said, whether it's offensive or not.
Yeah.
If no one laughed, that's not a good joke.
Yeah.
And you can't be like, well, no one laughed because I said the N-word and I'm not supposed to. It's like, no, that wasn't funny. Like, right. So don't say that anymore.
Right.
I've been watching a few of the Kill Tonys or whatever when they've been in Austin and stuff. And some of the guys walk up and you just watch everyone like just comes out. It's like, whoa, that's a swing you don't take. You know, it's just like, you know, it's just like, I got my first minute. It's the only time I'm going to be edgy and stuff. And you can just see, because like anyone who's like all those guys out there who've been like veterans in comedy scenes, just they're always like, they always like step back and don't even comment. They just like, let's see where what this guy's going to do. Because
I also think, like, there's a big thing with comedy to where if you haven't done it, you might have some heroes. Like, Anthony Jeselnik, no matter how you feel about him, he's a good joke writer.
Sure.
He used to write 100 jokes a day. Yeah. But some people watch Anthony Jeselnik and don't realize this guy writes 100 jokes a day and is good at it. And so all they hear is this guy is saying some fucked up shit, and that's what's funny. And so, like, I remember being in Seattle visiting Joe, and some dude walked up on stage and he is like, my girlfriend got pregnant, so I punched her in the stomach 7 times. And like, then no one laughed. And he is like, oh, really? Like, y'all are like that? It's like, no, it's not even us
really?
Being political.
It's not really. It's not
really. So you're just gonna stop a guy on the stairwell from chopping a chicken down the stairs? Like, is this your problem?
This thing kills in like the South. No, I'm just kidding. Now the South hates me. No, I'm just kidding.
You're in it, baby. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just the audacity to think that that's like gives you, because he does, like, because I mean, that's where a lot of the stuff, like, to me, like, gets like where it's just absurd, where like other comedians use, or even new comedians used, established comedians fucking standing to like make things okay.
It's yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're not there. Yeah, you haven't earned it. So what the fuck are you doing? You can't just roll in here and lead with a fucking Jeselnik joke. Are you fucking kidding me? Who the fuck
come out
you
doing
are?
Andrew
well,
Dice
and the thing
Clay
is, like,
shit.
That wasn't even a joke. Like,
no,
that's
not.
The thing is, like, Jeselnik writes jokes. Yeah. Whether you like him or not, he does write jokes. You can see, like, if you tear it apart, you can go, here's the setup, here's the punchline.
Right.
I didn't like the joke, but there it is. I punched my girlfriend 7 times in the stomach is not a joke.
Yeah.
That's just, that's a fucking, that gets you sent to jail.
It's assault. That's assault, brother. All right, I did my one black voice in the show.
I love this. This is one of the fun episodes we've done. All right, so we like to ask questions at the, at this point in the, at the pod.
Yeah.
We've broken down that stat pretty good, but so let's get to know you a little bit better. I always like to start off with something kind of just random. So, as a kid growing up, I used to love the movie Ski Patrol, and I watch it today, and I hate the fact that I ever loved it. It's terrible. What's something from your childhood that you loved that, like, now you revisit and you're like, oh, gross?
We were talking about music earlier, and I just want to make an apology for me not knowing any music in your box.
Oh, we'll get to that in the end, yeah, for sure.
But one thing is...
I hope it's DC Talk you're about to say.
No, I did love DC Talk, though. But it's just like, man, when I was 13, I got an album by Thousand Foot Crutch, which was a Christian band called Phenomenon. And I had one of those CD players that you could set to be your alarm in the morning. And I woke up every morning to Phenomenon by Thousand Foot Crutch. And I thought I was so cool. And I went back and I listened to that recently. And I was like, this is god awful. This is so bad. I hope, like, usually I'm trying to be a nice guy. I hope Thousand Foot Crutch hears this. I hope they know they're just a piece of,
like,
shit.
You know, there's some
y'all
like
appeal to like 10-year-old kids. And when I come back and revisit this shit. Fuck you guys.
There's some analytic out there that just pulled the name Thousand Foot Crutch and kicked it back to their marketing team. Good. They're like, "Hey, somebody's listening. We got to get on the show."
Yeah. next week is you're gonna be doing Thousand Foot Crutch's first show ever. And they're gonna be like, "We only led two people to Christ. That show is a real failure."
Well, do you have anything, Caleb, that you saw? I'm like this kid that's no good.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few. I know that, at least in the top of my head, like, there was, like, some really, really shitty, like, metal bands that, like, my brother turned me on to. Like, I can't think of what the band name is, but I know the song name was, like, The Roof Is On Fire.
Oh, was that really metal, though? That was, we don't need no water, that one.
Make the motherfucker burn. Yeah. But it was, like,
it was a Bloodhound Gang.
But it was somebody different.
They were more of a
joke
band. Like, okay, so there's a heavy metal cover of the Bloodhound Gang.
And so, yeah, I don't remember. I should know. It's like a terrible name, like Skulls.
Skull Crutch.
Some shit.
We're way better than 10,000 Crutches, whatever you said.
Well, I think this year I kind of like dug back into a bunch of Christmas movies that I thought that I liked it as a kid. Like, I always thought that Tim Allen... The Santa Claus was like a great movie because there's like... five lines in it that are like kind of funny.
Yeah.
Well, I watched the whole thing. The thing's a fucking turd. It sucks. I like want to punch the kid in the face the whole time. It's like, Dad. And then like Tim Allen's like, terrible CGI. It's
how fat I'm getting.
Yeah. It's like one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Like,
I hope my mom doesn't listen to this. We can't be friends if she does.
I'm telling you, and I'll tell your mom that movie fucking sucks. It's a shitty fucking movie. And I was like, oh yeah, it's like there for like I hadn't watched it in maybe 5-6 years, and I was like, oh fucking Santa Claus is the shit. And then like I saw it on and I watched it, I was like, ugh. Ugh. Man, fuck this. This sucks.
I always hate that. It's just like, because you like have this like kid memory of it, and you're like, oh, I used to love this and stuff. It's like, that's the same thing with Ski Patrol. It's like, it's got people that like became really good, yeah. You know, like George Lopez is in it. What's it? Paul Feig or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like he plays like Stanley in it, like, and like he became like big producer or whatever. But it's like, it is so terrible. Like, I mean, there are other ski movies I can still watch, like ones from the 80s, like Hot Dog the Movie and shit like that. It's like, if you didn't know this, I love ski movies, but I was just like, I'm like, why did I like this as a kid? Like this is just painful and slapstick and stupid. I'm like, but you know, you're like 10 years old, so
yeah. It was like, yeah, I guess the way I could like, I don't know, when I was a kid watching it, like, I'd always remember the parts that I liked, so I'd probably I probably just never just sat there and was just like, I'm watching this. It's like, you was probably dicking around doing other stuff.
You thought,
and then you'd be like, oh, here's the part. Popo Shisho! Yeah, he's dead air! Fucking awesome movie!
It's gotta be how kids feel about the grown-ups movie now, because I watch those, I'm like, this is so terrible. And like, kids love them. Those movies make, like, $200 million stuff.
Yeah.
They're, I think they're making, like, 3 or 4 of them, so.
Yeah. Cash cow. They don't give a fuck. Take it to the
You
bank.
Just got to have two good lines, right?
Yeah, there's like a...
Yeah. I want my $2. That's a great movie, though. Better Off Dead still holds up, by the way. John Cusack, if you like the Cummins podcast, please come up here. We'll talk about the movie. I know you don't like it.
That'll work. He's on his way.
All right. My question is like... okay, so... For comedy wise, like you said, after your first set, or at least in that first time where you were writing, you already knew you wanted to go to Chicago. Was this like for you, was that like where the Mecca was? Like you just wanted to get around in that area, like because that's like it sounds like that goal like was always like in the back of your head. Like if I do well at this, then this is where I want to go.
So I had been listening to, like I said, like this was a studied. What y'all just saw was like a lot of effort, which is sad.
Many podcasts, to listen to.
I listened to a lot of podcasts and stuff, and I didn't think I wanted to do stand up. I really didn't. I thought I was trying to make my friend happy, but I'd listened to all these podcasts so I could be good at it because I didn't want to suck at it. And I'd listened to a lot of Pete Holmes, and he talked about growing, like about coming up in Chicago. I don't think that's where he started. But that's kind of where he got his legs.
Yeah, he's like Evansville or something where he grew up, yeah. Which is like suburb of Chicago.
And then, so then I did this, and New York seemed scary. New York seemed like you come here to make it, and L.A. seemed the same way. And so I was like, I don't want to go somewhere to make it. I want to go somewhere to get good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Chicago was like what I'd heard in the podcast. So that's the big reason I moved to Chicago. I'm
the
glad
Lion's Den and all those like
yeah,
places.
Yeah.
Like...
And I used to do a open mic at the old Lion's Den. Mm. It wasn't called the Lion's Den anymore. But like I moved to Chicago and I'm glad I moved. But like the only reason I moved is because of Pete Holmes's podcast. And I moved there and, went from going up like Lubbock. We had a while in Lubbock that I would call like the glory years where we got to go up four times a week and sometimes it was to a huge audience. Yeah. And I honestly think that's better for getting good than what I did in Chicago because you have a real crowd.
Cutthroat, like as far as getting on stage or like it was just like it was all comics in the crowd and you didn't really get to perform to a real audience.
Yeah, it was just all comics. It was like, I mean, when I first moved there and I wasn't working a job because I get summers off as a teacher, I went there and there was a time I did 24 mics in a week. But it's like, here's the thing is like you go on Monday to a 5 p.m. mic. And you do that 5 p.m. mic, and there's four people there, and then you go to the 6:30 mic, and the four people follow you. And then maybe the 6:30 mic, you have five people there, but four of them have already seen this fucking set.
Okay.
And so, and I'm not shitting on Chicago comedy at all. Like, it's a good place to be, but it is... I think Chicago taught me, like, going up a lot isn't what it's about. Like, I think when I moved to Chicago, I was like, well, if I can hit 10 times a week, then I'm going to be awesome. But like my new thing and a big reason I was willing to move to Lubbock is because I realized like even in Houston, which isn't as big of a comedy scene as I went, I'm going up eight times a week. But seven of those times I'm not doing anything new and I'm not working on anything. I'm just doing it to hit a number. I'm just doing it to say I've hit seven times a week. And then I finally realized like, every time you go up, you should be working on something, unless it's a show. If it's a show, you can go up and do your shit. Yeah. But like, if it's an open mic, you need to know what you're working on.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I wasn't working on shit. I was.
I think that's a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
A lot of
like,
people
like,
say
like,
they
like
are
it kind of crutch,
aren't.
You're like, you're all, like, material that you know works.
Yeah. And I mean, me and Aaron always kind of pick it out, and we'll pick it out for each other. Like, we co host a show and.
Your bailout.
Oh, yeah, there's always a bailout somewhere.
Like, I'm not doing well. Here comes my bailout joke.
I'm Caleb, goddammit. I'm on the list, and y'all better fucking laugh, so I'm pulling out the bailout. And it's like,
but see, that sucks, too, because like then you pull out the bailout for a shitty show.
Oh, yeah.
And best case scenario is it goes like it's supposed to go. Because like I have jokes that I know are good.
Right.
And so if I pull those jokes out and the jokes go well, it happened exactly what I thought was supposed to happen. So I don't even get that joy of being like, I didn't know if that was going to be good. I'm like, that was supposed to be good. So best case scenario, it goes exactly like you thought it would.
Right.
Worst case scenario
like
is you're like, oh, my good shit's not even good.
Yeah, you're like, why did he even write this?
Like, son of a bitch. I need to rethink my whole fucking idea.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, like, it's crazy, like, and I can only imagine that, because, like, you've been to, like, two comedy cities that you've been in, Chicago and Houston, and it's, you come back to, like, I mean, the good thing about Lubbock is we'll still have, like, all of our, like, open mics are still, you get mostly regular audience, it's not, there's, like, 10 or 15 comics, but then there's, like, maybe at the like a good point it was like 20 or 30. When we build back up, it'll probably be another like 10. Like, but like that. I mean, your jokes are going to them, you know, not the comics. Like, if you're killing with a bunch of comics, you're not going to be able to do a real show anywhere because, you know, it's like you're gonna be playing to the back of the room, and there's a lot of like jokes that are going to be the more harsh hitting like stuff that like this PC culture doesn't like anymore. But
yeah, and that was like a lot of the times like I would go up, and Chicago got this weird kind of thing where I'd have to go up, and I had some jokes where I'd go up at open mics that were all comics and they would murder, and I'd go, I can never do that joke because it just did well with all comics.
Yeah.
And so like it was trying to figure out this weird like how well can it do with comics that makes me think it's going to do well with normal people, because I had jokes that did really well with comics, and I was like, oh, man, I'm about to be on SNL.
Yeah.
And so then I'd go and I'd do the same joke in front of real people, and they'd be like, you're a psychopath.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Only comics think that fucking crazy shit.
Yeah, you like, crazy bastard.
And so, I mean, that is a great thing about Lubbock. I love Lubbock comedy, and I think Lubbock comedy is a pretty true... I don't think anything's 100% true of, like, how's it going to go, but I think Lubbock is a better gauge than most big cities because you get real people.
Yeah, yeah, and, like, and to, like, kind of build on that, like, to really think about it, like, I'm usually kind of, like, refreshingly surprised on, like, the political viewpoint of our audiences as well in Lubbock. Like, they really are kind of 50-50 here in a sense, even though we're, like, a 70-30 fucking split.
Yeah.
Because all those old dumb fucks that go to church and shit and, like, pray because they're going to die and they don't want to disappear for forever, they're in bed whenever we're telling jokes. So there's at least, like, a conservative... kind of like there's at least kind of a line there that I think's a little bit more true to like the middle of it, where you actually kind of you're kind of like pleasantly surprised on who's out listening to your show, and you're like,
the back row Baptists are out at the bars, you know. Like,
well, I mean because that's what people, you know, we're in the Bible Belt and all this stuff, but at the end of the day, whenever you're doing a show for comedy, like it almost skews a little bit to the left a little bit, but there's still enough people to be like, hell no, like that's still kind of cool.
Lubbock, I feel like Lubbock audiences seem to speak truer to the greater America, to where like Chicago, like the big thing that started annoying me about Chicago is there's some people towards my end of my time there before I moved who would go up and do no jokes, and they'd be like, Trump, stupid. And people would be like,
that's like giving it up for the troops or whatever. It's just like that easy like clap or like it's just you don't want to, you don't, everyone like I don't know, like it seemed like the stuff I didn't love it did not work in Austin, so I don't know.
Yeah, I guess the only joke I'd ever have like that was like, Bart got arrested, let's give it up. Like, they finally got him.
Local jokes get local work, and there is something to be said about that. I mean, those jokes that only work in Lubbock, Texas, like that would be like a Bart joke or like something recent with the mayor or whatever. It's like, put your damn mask on, shit like that. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the scene of Lubbock, but I mean, Gendel used to have one of the best local jokes about like Marsha Sharp. Like, he was like, I hope someone else wins a championship so I can get to work faster.
Yeah. That is a great joke. Yeah. That freeway really like just cuts the time down.
Right.
But I'll do one more, and then if you want to do more, one more, Caleb. I wanted to talk, because you were in Chicago and stuff, it's like, you tossed us Rena Kahn, which we love. She came down here, has done shows.
She's amazing.
And she's so much fun, and so we always love it. Like, who are some other people that you want to give a shout-out to that were in, the Houston scene or the Chicago scene that you feel like you can throw a bone to?
God, this is going to be... I'm going to try to limit my list to five. Chicago was this amazing place when I first got there, to where, like, because there's all the fucked up shit about, like, women aren't funny. When I got to Chicago, the people who were funny were women, and it was Rena Kahn, and then Kristen Toomey is so funny, and you can get her on YouTube doing stuff at the Chicago Laugh Factory. It's one of the funniest comics I've ever watched.
Hell yeah.
And then... for Chicago, there are so many, but I did talk about women, so I'm going to stick to women She's in New York now, but Rebecca O'Neill, that those were the big three when I moved there. Like, people were like, man, Rena always kills, Rebecca always kills, Christy always kills. And they do. They were so fucking good. And like, and all of them you can still look up now, and they're doing so well. And they're all very kind people, which I think is a big thing with comedy. Houston, God, can I do six? I said I was going to do five. I'm going to do six. Yeah. I'm going to do three for Chicago.
No limit here. Yeah.
Three for Houston. Houston, Zahid Duji has one of the funniest jokes I've ever heard. He's a very funny guy in general, but he has a joke about about believing in God because he can't suck his own dick. And that sounds like such a dumb
interesting
joke.
Premise.
Like, it's the hardest I've ever laughed at a live comedy show in a long time. Is him like, because, and I don't want to fuck up his joke, but he talks about like he believes in God because he's tried to suck his own dick, and that space between his mouth and the dick, he's like, I think that's where God is. And it's that's great. So that's great. Good. And he's the kindest man I know. He's the reason I moved to Houston, is because I was looking at different cities in Texas to come back. And he was someone who was like, man, I got you. Like, let me put you on all these shows. He's such a good dude. There's a guy there that I fucking hate named Grady Pruitt, who's been doing it for like 3 years and is funnier than most people I know. Like, he's just so, like, because like people are like, man, Grady's so great. And I went there and I was like, I'm going to bury this fucker. And then, like, because they're like, he's been doing it 2.5, 3 years. And I was like, I'm going to bury this dude. He doesn't know. And then he went up before me on a show, and I was like, what the fuck is that?
You're like, shit.
And he's just like, and he will, like, he can literally just get up and be like, here's what happened this week. And it's funnier than my best joke. And it pisses impressive. Me off so much.
Like that raw talent where you just be like, yeah, that's like impressive. This. Yeah, I was at like the gas station today, and you just like make it so funny.
Yeah, like you could look at Grady Pruitt before he went on stage and went like, hey. Grape, make grape funny, and he would go up and just bury you with the word grape, and it's such bullshit. And then there's this guy, this guy was my favorite, Victor Tran. There's this guy named Victor Tran.
I think I've heard of him. Yeah,
he's so good. Like, his joke writing is just amazing, and he's like a mix, because, you know, like, you got like the raw talent where like they can go up and talk about grapes, and then you got the people who might be really good at writing. But he's just, like, his writing is so good, but he just went up. He had one of the best sets I've ever seen in my life. I had a friend visiting me from Chicago, and I was like, man, you know, I'm kind of a big deal down here in Houston. And he was like, oh, you're doing a show? And I was like, yeah, you can come watch me do this show. And Victor Tran went up before me. And that's one of the, because I hear people talk about it, that's one of the 4 or 5 times in my life where I've been like, I'm scared. Like, I'm scared to follow this guy. And he just went up and just murdered. And I'm not going to even tell his jokes because I'll mess them up. But Victor Tran is such a good guy. So let's see. If you are listening, Victor Tran, Zahid Duji, Rena Kalm, Rebecca O'Neill, Kristen Toomey, and then Grady Pruitt.
That asshole Grady Pruitt.
That asshole God, Grady
so
Pruitt.
Good after 3 years.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, it says that. I understand that jealousy when somebody goes up the first time. I'm like, man, they crushed. I'm like, God damn it.
We've almost like ruined a kid on that. Like, he actually has done decent. He's only still like a year and a half into it. But like,
are
everyone,
you talking about the JV, Jake Baker? Yeah,
he's done okay. He's done decent. But like, people started calling him the prodigy.
I saw that guy. He is very good. I really like him. I saw him. Like we had three open.
Yeah, he's on episode, I don't know, 7 or something. Like, look it up, Jake Baker. Check it out.
I wasn't here. Was I here?
Damn.
That might have been when you had the vid, the old COVID.
I did have COVID.
Yeah, he went up the first time I ever met him. He had like a notebook, and I was like, why don't you go fuck yourself? How about that?
Well, it's like, dude, I don't know. He had like all the quirky shit. I knew he was going to be funny. Like, he'd order food, and he'd be like, I can't eat anything. And then you'd hear him like throwing up in the bathroom. He's like, you didn't even fucking eat. And he'd be like, he's like, super nervous. Like, dude, you're going to be fine. I bet you this kid's going to be
he's
really,
like
really
funny. Jamie from Any Given Sunday. He would throw up before every set, you know?
He was very funny. I remember watching him the first time I did an open mic. After returning, and I was just like, damn, this kid's good. And he's young. He is a kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's 20,
21. 20 something. Maybe 21, 22.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll end with just kind of like a, I guess more like a hypothetical, but like, are you ready to like at least like comprehend that like Lubbock comedy has been gone for almost a year and we're probably going to have to build this thing up back from scratch. So, yeah. Or I don't know. I mean,
March,
I think
March, we're coming back in March.
March. We're going to be back in March. But, I don't know, like, how to, like, I mean, I don't know if it's even really a question, just to more to, like, talk about it, like, just how quickly, like, Lubbock, like, how comedy in Lubbock is just kind of, like, whenever you get to go to a show and you do a show, you're like, damn, that's amazing, but then you see that same person, like, 6 months later, and you're like, I didn't know you did comedy, and it's like, that's how fucking blacked out people get in Lubbock on a regular basis. But I mean,
consistency is rough. It's like 6 months to build.
This is something I didn't think we'd get to talk about on the podcast because this doesn't seem podcast. It just seems like me getting drunk and being like, we can do big things.
Aspirational ending. That's what we like to do.
I really think Lubbock is such a good place for comedy because for several reasons, but we're 2 hours away from several really good sized cities, like not big cities, but like. If you think about a 2 hour radius from here, we have 1.5 million people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, West Texas Triangle.
Yeah.
And you heard about the other Texas Triangle, but that's the other one.
But that's I really think I'm excited. I'm bummed we're starting over. I'm very bummed because I moved here being like, I'm going to get into comedy. I kind of know it's COVID right now, but like, I'm bummed because I really haven't met anyone in the scene right now. Like we've known each other.
Yeah.
But as far as like being successful, I really think you can put on some great shows out here. I think we have to get a little bit better at like marketing and like, let's film some shit. But I mean, I really could see like a thing where it goes, you know what? Once a year, we're going to go to San Angelo and do like a good show where people get paid decent money. Like, and I'm not talking about like $20 decent. I'm talking about like we go and do a show with five people. They all bring up $300. Then we go and do a show in Midland. We go and do a show in Odessa. We go and do a show in Amarillo. Like I think with the way comedy has moved, like it used to be, you have to be in New York if you want to make it.
In a major metro somewhere. Yeah.
That's not true anymore. And it's like we could build an audience for the Lubbock comedy scene all over the place, and like we can start small. I really think if we put our heads together, we could do really well. I think the thing that scares me about Lubbock is, and a big reason I moved back to Lubbock is when I first started, our comedy scene was so small that it was my life, but it was some of the happiest years of my life being like, it's Friday, man. Let's play some poker.
And I've had so much fun at those early parties that you invited me to. I was like the older guy, and it's like, hey, come to this house party. I'm like, yay.
Yeah, and so like I am a little scared about that, and the bigger a comedy scene gets, the more like people are going to start fucking each other over, but I think we can avoid that, and I think if Lubbock comedy can really accept like what's good for you is good for me and avoid the jealousy of like, oh, well, Caleb got to open for this guy who I wanted to open, and now I hate Caleb. If we can avoid that and be like, Caleb got to open for this guy, and the show went good, which means this guy might be back, or this guy might tell his other semi-famous friend, hey, Lubbock's a good place for comedy. I think we have to remember that comedy builds on itself.
Right. And so it does. That's smart.
And if we can do that and really go, we're going to build off each other's success and not be mad at Caleb for doing well, or not be mad at Durbin for doing well.
Are people mad at me?
I mean, I just think it's.
People get mad about like people get on big shows and stuff. Like
it happens.
I mean, yeah, it's just like I was really excited that Chrissy Covington opened for Steve Trevino the first time at the Buddy Holly Hall.
Oh, that's
just
fucking
like,
amazing.
I'm like, it's one of our own. That's awesome. Like, yeah. So like, I mean, he brought some people and stuff, but still, one of our people got to go up and do that. And I'm just
I think like fellows like us, like we kind of understand that in a sense where like. Did they pick you? No. Are you upset about that? That's okay to be upset about, but you can't sit here and go sour grapes like fuck her or like or fuck that person because they got it. You got to support them and just say, look, you know, at the end of the day, that's still getting my name, what I'm associated with, exposure.
And I think comedy is supposed to be competitive. Like, I think it's semi-healthy. Someone big comes in town, they ask Caleb to open for them. I think it's semi-healthy for me to go like, man, I wish that was me.
Yeah.
But then there's a big difference for me going, man, I wish that was me. I'm kind of upset. And then me going, I'm not going to talk to Caleb anymore because I'm fucking funnier than him.
Right.
And like, I mean, we can build this scene based on each other's successes. And yeah, I'm like really excited about it.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, that's the end of the day. Like, at the end of the day, we can build this to whatever we want it to be. I mean, that's that's what Lubbock is. I mean, I think that that's what kind of these smaller American towns that are 200 to 300,000 people, like, you can literally lay the groundwork yourself as long as you work hard and you deliver on the goods. I mean, as long as you're funny and you have some sort of idea on how to deliver, then, that stuff really, really does gain traction, which we saw right towards up to the to whenever COVID-19 hit. I mean, we were having we had two shows that we had in multiple months that it was pretty much standing room only in those rooms. So, you know, hopefully those things will move to somewhere else or get the momentum there sooner than what it took the last time. But, you know, I'm excited to I know me and Aaron are super stoked to have someone of your caliber and kind of, you know, world travelness, like, so to speak, for Lubbock. It's like, well, he's been to two major cities and he was successful there. Yeah.
And he came back here. So like,
and he came back here. So like, you know, it's just, I think we're just excited to have you back and to be able to like collaborate or even, you know, just know you're somewhere on the show or, you know, hey, we're going to be able to look forward to doing comedy with somebody that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have come back if I did not think it was possible to be successful here. Like, and that's something like I looked at, like, and I told people all the time, because Lubbock's so far away from most places, but I told people all the time, I was like, man, there's just, you could do some shit in Lubbock. And that was a big reason I was willing to come back, is like, I think there is some big shit you can do in Lubbock. And I think if we play our cards right, I think we will do some big shit here.
I agree.
I like it. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I think we're ready to fucking start this thing off. But we're going to close this podcast out the way we like to do, which has nothing to do with fucking comedy, which is I always get somebody to pick a record from my record collection, and it's always so much fun because, like, some people just pick random shit and stuff, and so I've got this 45 by the band Diet Sig, which you picked, and it's the Sleep Talk Dinner Date one. Why did you pick that one? Was it just because of the picture, or
It was mostly because of the name Sleep Talk. I like that name for an album. I wasn't allowed to listen to music that was not Christian music until I was like 16, 17. Which
what was your big defiance one? What did you pick up that you're just like, oh, I can't, oh, like, I'm listening to Meatloaf's "Bad Out of Hell."
I love.
He
this
went to
story.
Lubbock Christian University, by the way. Just
for like a minute.
Yeah.
When I was like 14, this like hippie painter guy came over to paint my room. My parents paid him to paint my bedroom. And I walked in while he was painting my bedroom, and I had a book by Bob Dylan. Because at this point, I knew I was missing shit. And he walked
in. Like, he's a poet. He doesn't do music.
Yeah. Well, no, I knew he did music, but I was like, I know I'm not allowed to listen to his music. And then this guy was painting my room, and I walked in. I was like, oh, my bad, man. I didn't know you're here. And he's like, no. You like Bob Dylan? And then I kind of explained the situation to him, and I was like, I'm not really allowed to listen to music, so I don't really know Bob Dylan, so I bought this book by him. And he was like, oh, man, you got to listen to Bob Dylan. And then he came back the next day and, like, smuggled in his painter's, like, bag. I mean, I'm talking like...
I love this underground Bob Dylan.
Like, I'm talking like 30 albums by Bob Dylan. And he like took out like 30 CDs by Bob Dylan.
Damn. I mean, only about five of those. But like,
I'm going to save this that I wrote.
And he was like, look, man, listen to all of these and don't tell your parents. And he gave me like 30 CDs by Bob Dylan.
Like, and I'm so, a child. Where the fuck do I hide these?
Well, I mean, I was 14 or 15. It was sad. But like, the thing is, like, I don't even know if I like Bob Dylan anymore. But I love Bob Dylan because of that.
Bob Dylan opened the door. Yeah. Like, opened the door for a lot of people and you into like, into music.
Yeah. And that's like, I still remember like putting Blood on the tracks because I was like, that seems album. Like the most sinful one. And I was just sounds like, oh, crazy. Man, so good. So that's what broke my music cherry.
Well, I'm glad that you're in in the music world. Like, now, I think it was like 14. I was like listening to Rancid, I think, or something like that. Like, I remember. I do have a story. My mom confiscated my Beavis and Butthead soundtrack. She was she's like, you can't have this. And this is my friend Eric had it. He's just like, go and listen to this. And then she found it. She's like, I'm taking this. So sorry, Eric, for that CD that was confiscated. That was yours back in the day. Who would have known? And
I
stuff.
was
I was the youngest of a divorced family, so by the time I even got like 10 or 12, I had pretty...
You could do anything. It was like California love.
Yeah, it was pretty solid experience by then. You just know how to pin them against each other.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I wish my parents got
manipulation.
Divorced.
Manipulation.
We'll start.
Dad, Mom said she's going to buy me the new Eminem album, but if you won't, then fine. I guess Mom will do it like she does everything else.
Oh, that's so good. Son that's of such, a bitch. Such a movie right there. It's just like... It's
even
like,
the explicit one? Yes, of course the explicit one.
That's all we want right now, you know? Yeah, we know. We'll start a new podcast called Christian Upbringing, and like, and then we kind of we get the dark, dark tales of that stuff.
I would love that.
My name's with a donut.
But this has been a great podcast. Corey, do you have anything you want to promote or talk about or close this thing out?
No. No, I'm not doing shit.
All right. Well, if not, I will say, like, I will promote the Martin House Peanut Butter, the Statement of Purpose beer. I kind of enjoyed it.
It's actually good.
And we got, because Corey does not drink beer, we got the Crackberry, which I thought was also enjoyable.
Really good, yeah.
For the cider.
Blackberries, apples. Crack. That's what it says in the ingredients.
Yeah. It's got crack, so you know you're addicted to it. So, yeah, check all those things out. And also, sponsor us if you'd like. All right, we'll check you guys later. This is First Stage, Episode 12. Mr. Corey Evans, thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, thank you.